Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
Good evening, gearheads. Welcome to Speed City. We are live in Austin, Texas. Just had another weekend of racing. This is John Massengill sitting here with Jonathan Green. How are you, Mr. Green?
Howdy, folks. Yeah, good, man. Good, man. It was nice to be here for a weekend.
Yeah, two weekends almost in a row. Two out of three ain't bad, as
no,
they say.
Not at all. And a busy weekend. Great weather here for IMSA. And amazing, a really, really amazing crowd for IMSA this weekend. It's growing in popularity year on year at this event. And I know that there's still sort of criticism that, there isn't the vast amount of race fans here in Austin traditionally. But I tell you what, it's growing. And most of the fans out there were Austinites, I think, this weekend. A lot of them were. But it's very, very popular. Weather was out. People are enjoying it. It was good fun.
Yeah, it was really a great event. Well, let me tell you what we're going to talk about tonight, because obviously IMSA a lot this weekend here in Austin, so we're going to talk about that a lot. FIA World Endurance Championship at Spa, amazing, one of the greatest racetracks in the world. It was fun to watch that. We're going to talk a lot about Spa. MotoGP at Jerez in Spain for the Spanish Grand Prix. That was great racing and great to see that. And we also have a special guest, because we have Ben Keating, the IMSA driver in the AMG, and he's going to join us in about half hour.
Yeah, an eventful weekend.
Yeah, and he won in his class here in Austin. He's a Texan. He's running right down the road from the Houston area.
Get out, yeah, Tomball, Texas. I used to live down the road.
And so he's going to join us in about half hour, and we're going to talk a little about Alonso.
Yeah, definitely. I want to talk about that.
Yeah, because that was really cool the way they did that. So we're going to talk about the testing we're talking about and the way they gave everybody access. But let's jump into this, what happened here in Austin, Jonathan, because it was like we just started. It was a great race. And, of course, the Taylor brothers are on a roll, man.
Man, are they? And, I mean, you know, it's that combination. They've always been good. Wayne Taylor Racing, obviously, family-run operation. Ricky, and Jordan, fantastic. You probably heard, if you were following our Twitter over the weekend, I interviewed them straight after their pole position. And it's always a different story when you kind of get the behind-the-scenes thing, because they had their own problems. But when you look at the tail of the tape, as it were, when you look at the results this year, they've been unbeatable. Now, the Cadillac is very, very good, but I think in this combination of both Cadillac and the two Taylors, it's unstoppable at the moment, anyway. And there really is. I was asking both. It's a good interview, actually, because I was asking both drivers, given that they were brothers. Everybody says, oh, well, they've got great chemistry. And, you know, you could argue and say, well, is that the case? You know, I mean, do you actually share data? And they said, we both have different strengths and weaknesses in terms of how we drive the car. Jordan's saying he drives it a little harder, sometimes to the detriment of the tires. But Ricky's, you know,
smoother, more finesse,
smooth, and he's the closer, if you will. But the combination is scintillating right now, and that Cadillac is both a beauty to look at, and it doesn't matter where you put it, it's going right through the grid as being the car to have.
And a fantastic start, because, you know, Cadillac just stepping back into this series.
It's a great story, isn't it? Cadillac, and I mean, you know, we grew up in an era where Cadillac was, you know, when I first came to America, Cadillacs were these big boats. We had one, a big Cadillac DeVille in Houston, Texas. And, you know, they've always been known for their luxury and plushness. I mean, you know, you could live in a Cadillac. It's always a joke. But now they wanted to step it up in the last decade. Max Angelelli and obviously the Taylor brothers. But as a group, they've developed both their road cars and now racing cars. Now, and this particular car that we're talking about, this prototype, again, is a real removal from where Cadillac are as a car company, because prototypes don't even look like the cars, you know, that you put on the roads.
Yeah,
now, they've got the CTS, and they've got some great cars, but in the prototype, that's for purists in racing. But for Cadillac to do that, good for them.
Yeah, and of course, with the CTS-V and the ATS-V now this year, last year, they've got a couple of really amazing road cars.
Yeah.
I mean, CTS-V is now in the third generation of the V, because the first gen had a 405 horsepower V8, and I was like, wow, Cadillac doing that. And then the next one had a 560 horsepower V8 supercharged, and now the latest one, 640 horsepower. So we're talking some of the fastest cars on the planet, 200-mile-an-hour four-door sedan.
You know, I think there's a podcast to be done on this, and I'd like to get somebody on from Cadillac because I'd like to understand or see if the philosophy is what I think it is, which is Cadillac kind of probably thought to themselves, how are we going to, you know, compete with the Audis and the Mercedes of this world, you know, in the modern, you know, in the new millennium, as it were. And I think that's been a philosophy for the last 17 years or so, is to bring Cadillac up to scratch. And I mean, now, if you step into a modern Cadillac, the road cars are multi-powerful engines and performance cars. They don't roll around. You don't roll around, and you know, it's a performance car now. Yeah. Up there with the Audi, you know, A8 or BMW 7 Series, so on and so forth.
And there's something that they've done that they have put Audi, Mercedes, BMW on the back foot, and that is the magnetic ride that the Cadillacs have offers the best on the planet in the compromise of ride versus handling. Because there's a couple of the cars.
How does that work?
It's what they do is they have the shocks have a liquid in them, right? Just like a lot of shocks, they have an oil in it,
like a motorbike shock.
Yeah, and so but what they have in that oil is they've got magnetic particles, and they actually have electromagnets on the shocks, and they can vary the viscosity of that oil, that fluid, with electronics, with the computer, and they started doing that years and years ago back in the 90s, Cadillac invented this technology, and right now they started leasing the technology for the likes of Ferrari, for example. So you know you've got something when you're leasing your technology to Ferrari.
So it's not active suspension, but it's magnetic suspension.
They actually have all of that.
Okay.
But the real secret for the last few years has been that magnetic suspension, that variable viscosity, the variable tension, and they can do it at like multiple times per second. So it's like the wheel's only turning like 2 inches, and it can change it, or maybe even an inch. It's really the resolution of that technology is crazy.
Wow, and they're using that in all their race programs and in the road car.
Yep, I know that they're using it in all the road cars now, and in fact, it's funny, that stuff has trickled down. For example, one of the greatest buys right now is the Chevrolet SS.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chevrolet SS, if you see it on the road, you go, it just looks like kind of like an Impala or a Chevrolet Cruze. It just looks like a very average Chevrolet road car. Well, this is the one that was built in Australia. You remember the Holden
scenario?
Well, you know, they've brought some cars over. Well, the Chevrolet SS was brought over from the Australian Holden generation of cars over there. And so they added that magnetic suspension to the Chevrolet SS.
Oh, wow.
So for this year, you can get – it's one of the few cars on the planet you can get that amazing technology and handling. You can get a six-speed shift transmission, manual shift, with a big V8, with a 6.3-liter V8. It's really – it's a crazy, astounding buy. And I was reading on Motor Trend that, like, Johnny Lieberman, he's a big author on Motor Trend. He chose it as the best handling car, one of the best sedans and best handling combinations of all, because they had it. General Motors put it on sale for 30% off. It was an astounding buy. You could buy it for like $32,000 a month ago. So anyway, this technology has trickled down even into that. It's trickled down into the Camaro. They use the same magnetic suspension in the Camaro. So they've really done some amazing things. But those halo cars, the CTS-V, the ATS-V, and now the new Camaro with the supercharged V8 and the magnetic suspension, the ZL1, the latest version of the ZL1, is also a halo car for General Motors using all the same technology from the V cars.
You got it out. You see, we just have to open your head now and again, and it's all in there. I love it.
Yeah, I do like to talk my cars.
Talk on. You've got the right show. But I tell you what, I think we should go deeper into this, and we'll try and get somebody from Cadillac and maybe do a general podcast on exactly what their philosophy is, because it's working for sure. And Cadillac are kings, without a doubt, here in the United States at the moment. But of course, there are other classes as well. The Daytona class, once again, Ford versus Ferrari. Yeah. There was a big accident at the front, which involved actually one of the big Ferraris and one of the Corvettes.
That's right.
Yeah. So the battle wasn't the normal battle. But again, it rages on. Ferrari winning out this time, same as they did in WEC, in the same sort of class as well. So Ferrari in that 488 continuing to, dominate there.
Yeah, and it's funny, we'll talk about WEC later, but it was, the same thing was happening over at WEC, the Ford GTs and the Ferrari 488s. And speaking of the Ferrari 488s,
beautiful.
I'm going to go off on a car tangent a little bit.
Okay, yeah,
go for it. The Ferrari 488, I guess it was last year it came out, the 458 was looked at as like this magical car, you know?
Well, it was for a decade. It completely dominated GT racing.
Using that same technology I was talking about, but that it was this magical car that it was the best. It was the best handling. It was obviously high performance, and it was the purest car, of sports cars for the road, and just nothing could touch it. Well, they decided they needed more horsepower, right? And these days, a simple way to add horsepower is turbocharger. So
right.
The 488, that's the difference.
It is a turbocharged.
It's a turbocharged V8. So, and when that came out, everybody's like, oh no, Ferrari, it's going to, because the first thing you think of when you think of Ferrari is the sound, right?
Yeah.
Well, turbochargers, think about where they go. They go on the exhaust.
Yeah.
So they muffle the sound. So it's like, oh no, you're going to destroy. When they released that they were going to have turbocharged Ferraris, the Ferrarista were going crazy because they were like, it's going to destroy the sound. It's going to sound horrible. But of course, it's Ferrari. So they figured out a way to make a turbocharged car sound like a Ferrari. It still spins up to 8,500 RPMs. It still sounds gorgeous. But that was an interesting little transition in the Ferrari world.
And riddle me this, they've also solved a problem that inherently, and you can, this is where my idiocy comes in here, but inherently, turbo cars also at that highest level. Well, I do a lot of Asian racing, as you know, and places like Malaysia, really humid, and therefore there's, you literally can cut the air. There is no air to breathe, as it were, and that actually causes a problem for turbo charge cars because they're down on power at these, at these very humid places. But I know for a fact that the 488 is kicking ass over in Asia. So how did they solve that problem?
You know what? I don't know how they solved that problem. I know that turbocharged cars in, like, for example, in cold, dry air can make a ton more power.
Sure.
I had a supercharged Corvette. It was aftermarket supercharged. And I bet you that car would make another 75 horsepower when it was cold. And that's no exaggeration because it was home engineered by me. It wasn't engineered by the factory. But like in high altitudes, turbocharged cars will leave their counterparts in the dust. But the humidity, I'm not sure. I'm not sure why they have trouble in Asia with those. But turbocharged cars...
It's just lack of air. I mean, you're trying to force air and ram it in there.
But it's got to be the humidity portion.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
Colder, drier air will make any turbo car make a ton more power. Well, hey, Jonathan, we got to take a break. So when we come back, we're going to continue a little more discussion about IMSA. And of course, don't forget, in about 15 minutes, we have Ben Keating joining us live to tell us about his victory right here in Austin at Circuit of the Americas for the Advanced Auto Parts Showdown, Sports Car Showdown. We'll be back in just a minute. Stay tuned for these messages.
MV Agusta motorcycles are the epitome of Italian style, precisely crafted with a passion for two-wheel art on wheels. Ducati Austin are the only MV Agusta and Ducati factory authorized technicians in Austin, servicing all European brands. Check the Brutale Sport Naked, the most extreme essential naked bike ever. Or the Turismo Veloce 800, the first revolutionary tourer to be built by MV Agusta. Or if you want a pedigree steeped in racing, then look no further than the World Supersport winning triple F3, 675 and 800. Or go all out for the ultimate legendary F4 MV Agusta. Italian style with Texas soul. Trade-in, consignments welcome and financing available. Ducati Austin and the home of MV Agusta at 818 Breaker Lane, just east of I-35. Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself, Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane.
Making talk radio great again.
Somebody has to come out and tell it like it is.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
This is Danny Walker from American Supercamp and the Broster Chicken Road Race Factory team, and you are listening to Speed City, so get your elbows up.
Elbows up. That's Danny Walker, who runs Jake Gagne in Moto America, and that is right. Elbows up is what he tells you when you're riding on the dirt. It's very similar to Colin Edwards' boot camp, small bikes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, elbows up, because that's what they want. The balance is all in your elbows. But it's certainly elbows up in the Broster Chicken, why did it cross the road, genuine Honda. Because Jake Gagne is trying to muscle that new bike, as is Nicky Hayden and Stefan Bradl at the world level. But Honda back in Moto America. So Danny Walker's team. It's good to hear him.
Well, let's wrap up the IMSA series here in Austin. Obviously, the crowd was huge. I don't know what the crowd was. And you're right, Jonathan. Austin is paying attention now. It's taken a few years, but there's tons of people that love. I met some fans today, and they said that they have a big group of guys, and they all get together, guys and gals, and they get together, and they had not stumbled across our show yet, and they're like, "Oh, it's so exciting! We got an Austin radio show," and
it's growing, isn't it?
And the whole key to this is, he said, a lot of them weren't race fans. He said a lot of them were car guys and gals,
yeah,
but they weren't race fans, and now they are. He said it was a group of about 25, but. The point is that they've grown from just being car people, because you know Americans love their cars, to being race fans because of what's happened here in Austin. So.
And also, I think you've got to look at the ground zero of this. A couple of years ago, sports car racing in this country was split. I think people didn't understand prototypes. WEC was just emerging. It's now top of its game, and the TV package, etc., is second to none. So sports car racing in general and GT racing has grown dramatically in the last few years, and now with a unified world championship and a unified sports car championship, I mean, look at the peripheries to this, which is Pirelli World Challenge, very strong at the moment, stands on its own. It too will be coming to the Circuit of the Americas, and at the end of the year, a Hankook 24-hour race.
Yeah.
So, in other words, more and more people are using production cars or GT high-end production cars, exotic production cars, to go racing. And I think the interest is there because these are cars you'll see. I mean, you know, we've been watching the i8 from BMW. I don't know if anybody races that, but it's...
I know, we both stumbled across those
here
on
the road. Austin, you know.
Yeah, there must be two or three of them at least.
But there's an interest in sports cars and exotic cars now, and to watch them race, it's a great afternoon out. And I think that's another thing, is that the Circuit of the Americas is also, you know, warming up to what to do with its crowd and how to entertain them for a full weekend that isn't just about racing. There's you know, activities as well.
And you know what was so great about this weekend, and you saw me doing it, is when you're going, when you get a ticket to go see this race here in Austin, you get to get into the paddock.
Yeah.
And that means you get to get your head right up next to the cars, and you're right there with them. And that the same crowd that I was talking about, all these people that are gearheads and that love their cars and they're learning about racing, they're looking at those cars going, "Oh my gosh, that is amazing. Look what they've done to this Aston Martin, this AMG, this Corvette." Yeah.
And you can bring race parts. You can bring little Jimmy. You know what I mean? I mean, you and I were probably the same. We went to car races when we were young, and it stuck with us, certainly with me.
Right.
When I was probably about 4, 5, 6, my dad took me down to Brands Hatch, and, you know, I was smitten minute. I'm down with my autograph book and all this sort of stuff. So, yeah, taking pictures by cars and all that kind of stuff. So getting the opportunity to do that is big. But also, I think, you know, concerts, Kings of Leon are going out there this week. There's more going on out there. There was a rap festival going on right in the middle of IMSA this weekend. Took us by surprise. We were like, where are all these young kiddos going?
Yeah, we were driving up and we said, wow, there's a lot of young people, really young people.
Interested in sports cars.
Yeah, and turns out they were there for a rap concert and going on at the same time. But that's great. More power Dakota for doing what they can with the
and
land.
Barcelona are coming. The big, I mean, yeah. No one's really, again, I don't, again, if you're not a soccer fan, I don't mind that. But I'm looking across at Westlake High School and there's plenty of soccer going on over there at the moment. Soccer's a massive sport now in this country. But I don't think still the connection is made between just how big. Barcelona are one of the biggest sports franchises worldwide. So if you take the Dallas Cowboys,
yeah.
If you take the Yankees. LA Lakers, yeah. The New York Yankees, you then start Real Madrid, Manchester United, and Barcelona are the three biggest football teams in the world, and maybe Boca Junior in Brazil in terms of, you know, interest and also money generated from their shirts and merchandises and so on and so forth.
And any one of those potentially, I don't know the numbers, but they could be bigger than all of the American ones you just described. They could be bigger in audience.
I think the only NFL franchise that ranks among them, and I think Sport Money is the place to look at that, because yeah. I remember looking at a show on Sport Money to talk about that, but I think Dallas is the only franchise that holds a candle to the likes of Real Madrid.
Yeah,
I bet Barcelona.
So. Yeah, I mean, because of the global reach that those teams have. I mean, I know the Cowboys and the Yankees probably have pretty big global audiences, but I don't think they're as big as those.
That's what's so amazing about soccer, and I'm so glad it's finally settled here in the States, because it was a long time coming. But it's just a global game, you know? People play it with, you know, a bag of paper, you know, in poor countries, and then they play at the highest level and in the snow, you name it. Everybody can play soccer, and I think it's one of those great sporting things. I'm so happy that Austin's getting involved with the biggest, with the biggest football team in the world.
Yep. Well, I think anything else from here at Austin and from the IMSA race, Jonathan, before we move on, because obviously the Corvettes won, but there was a Corvette that crashed, the four GTs. Let's see. I'm just looking down the list and seeing everybody did. But I mean, any other big stories that jump out?
Because not really. It was a race that went to form, except for that big crash at the beginning, as we saw. It was good. It was great. It was a great spectacle. I think the Taylors have definitely got a target on their back now, and I wonder if they can keep this going, because four in a row now, pretty impressive, and very different tracks too. You know, Daytona,
oh, good point. Yeah.
Long Beach, places that, are completely different. They go to Detroit next. The Taylors are quietly crossing their fingers that this could be a massive year for them.
Well, let's talk about WEC. And before we go too far, I noticed that WEC, and I don't remember them doing this last year, but you can watch the full race after the fact on YouTube now. I think it's a brilliant move by WEC.
That's a great move. I did not know that.
Yeah,
either.
I just stumbled across it today. I was like, wow, there's the whole race right here on YouTube from World Endurance Championship. So, but Spa, man, how was it looking at those sports cars and prototypes going through En Rouge once again? Just, that there's nothing like Spa.
Well, I'm gonna take my hat off to, I think, what was some of the best commentary I've heard. I think the combination of Bob Varsha and Calvin Fish, really good and really insightful. Both men really doing their homework, as they always have. I don't mean that they haven't, but they really brought me. I mean, I thought I was kind of like, I've seen this, done that type thing. But some of their descriptions about the heavy cars loaded down, hitting the boards, going through El Rouge, bottoming out effectively, and then going light as they hit the crest of that. It really brought you into the sport, and makes you really think about just how fast they're going. Generally speaking, just a fantastic circuit in so many ways. So many places to overtake. And of course, once you get into it and 6 hours, you're going to have plenty of overtaking, because the prototypes are so much faster than the GTs.
Yeah. And of course, real quick before I go any further, you were talking about the tire, the going through En Rouge and the hitting the bottom.
Yeah.
They were talking about when the cars were cold.
Yeah. Yeah.
The cars were lower to the ground. So that's one reason why they're scraping.
And did you see that one moment in the second hour, Ford and one of the Fords and one of the Ferraris going head to head, flat out down El Rouge? Big moment.
Yeah, that's got to be just incredible for those guys. Because everybody's watched Formula One cars go through there.
Sure.
At insane.
But they're on rails, man.
Yeah, I know. It's true. And, speaking of Formula One cars there in comparison, did you hear that, I don't know if it was Varsha, one of the other guys talking about, maybe Calvin Fish, but saying that those cars were 7 seconds off a Formula One car track there. That's how fast a wet car is now.
Yeah, I mean, that's why basically the guys driving them are either Formula One drivers or potential.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anybody young doing that scene, like Earl Bamber, for example, you know, frankly, they're driving as good as any Formula One driver. And when you look at Buemi and Davidson and Conway, you know,
yeah,
it reads like a who's who. Kobayashi, you know, these guys are all capable of being in Formula One.
Well, and think about it. Spa's a long track. It's over 4.5 or almost 4.5 miles.
Yeah.
So 7 seconds, that's getting pretty close. I mean, you might find some slow F1 cars towards the back of that. Because,
mm-hmm.
by the way, that was 7 seconds off Lewis Hamilton's winning time last year at Spa. So I wouldn't be a bit surprised if you had a Formula One car, you know, maybe not in its prime or whatever, that's running the same speed as that wet car.
Which is why I think so many drivers, I mean, Webber included, find themselves in the perfect position to join WEC and find themselves to be straight into a factory team, like as did Webber, but also a remarkable challenge, having worked as an individual all your life to try, you know, solely do what your own on your own thing, and then suddenly you've got two other teammates. Really, yeah. Really interesting. But let's talk about what happened, because Toyota have taken their second victory of the year, which is a real... we all wondered what would happen when Audi pulled out.
Yep.
And Porsche have been dominating for the last 2 years.
And Porsche won the pole, but Toyota won the race.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Toyota looked really good. And it wasn't actually the team that we expected to win the race. Mike Conway and Kobayashi were leading most of the way.
Yeah, it was like the last lap for sure, right?
Not far off, yeah, last few minutes.
Yeah. And look, with Porsche not winning it, it's really interesting with Audi being gone and Toyota and Porsche going head-to-head with this, but I don't know. I'm not sure who I want to see or what story I want to see out of LMP1 in WEC, but...
Oh, I'd love to see Toyota. I mean, you know, after the way they were denied last year at Le Mans, I'd love to see them continue this form. And, I mean, we know that Porsche are certainly not going to make up the numbers. They've got a really interesting lineup with Bernhard, Bamber, and Hartley. Good to see them on the podium. And obviously, Jani Lotterer, yeah. And Tandy, but no lottery about Lotterer. He's settling down nicely in that Porsche team. And, third card for Toyota. That will also finish in the top five. That was Sarrazin, Lapierre, and Kunimoto. But congratulations to Sebastian Buemi, Anthony Davidson, and Nakajima, of course, taking their victory. And it sets up well for both Le Mans coming up next in June. But also...
Can't believe it's already Le Mans time.
Well, you know, and once you've done Le Mans, then you got to start looking towards September and, you know, Circuit of the Americas, because that's coming up pretty quick.
Yep.
Hopefully we'll have a real Porsche-Toyota battle by the time they get here.
Yeah, we gotta go to break, but the last battle really that I want to talk about was, again, the four GTs and Ferraris.
Sure.
That was so good. You could tell, I mean, Ferrari had beat them in qualifying, but it's so great to see the four GTs back and doing so well.
Yeah, and I think Ferrari are gonna keep them honest as they are here in the States. Davide Rigon and Sam Bird. Sam Bird, of course, Formula E driver, another one of these should be Formula One drivers, but, doing the business today, and likewise the other Ferrari of Collado and Pier Guidi, really strong again.
Well, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to another guy who should probably be racing in Formula One, Ben Keating.
There you go.
All right, stay tuned to Speed City. We're live in Austin. Back after these messages.
If you've ridden motorcycles in this part of the country for long, no doubt you know of Bud's Motorcycle Shop. Bud left this world a while back, but his legendary Harley service rides on. No longer is Bud's in downtown Austin, it is now Revell's Heavy Duty, and they've moved out by the Formula One track. You'll see all the familiar faces, so bring in your new, used, and abused, but there's no sign of shiny showroom prices. So check it out at revellsheavyduty.com.
Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas, with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself. Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane.
The racetrack. It's where legends are born. Where only the finest machines earn their reputation for innovation and dominance. Such are the nameplates you'll find at Aston Martin of Austin, Lotus of Austin, Bentley Austin and Rolls-Royce Motorcars. Austin, exotic, iconic automobiles whose racing heritage turns everyday driving into an inspiring journey, because you're never just along for the ride. Highway 183 north of McNeil Road.
Talk 1370 is everywhere with the new Talk app. Get it now at talk1370.com.
So Andy Prio driving for Ford Chip Ganassi Racing, and this is Speed City.
There you go. Thank you, Dylan.
Andy Prelux.
Prelux. That's how they spell his name. They actually came as a world champion to Macau once. And we were doing I did a documentary on it, which I should put up on our YouTube site because it's good. but it's really funny because they literally, you know, when he first raced, no one could say his name.
of course, his name is spelled so weird.
Well, it's French. It's French. He's a Guernseyman. He's from
Channel Islands. Oh, that explains it for me.
Well, there you go. Well, yeah, but Prio and these kind of French-sounding names. How you say?
Ricky Bobby.
Ricky Bobby. I'm coming to get you, Andy Prio.
All right, we're going to bring our next guest on because he's like me. He's a Texan. He's going to talk normal.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah, fair enough. I used to be his neighbor because I lived in Champions, and he'll know exactly where that is.
All right, we're very excited to welcome our next guest who had a fantastic day right here in Austin yesterday out at COTA. Ben Keating, welcome back to Speed City.
Howdy, y'all.
Nicely played. Well, congratulations, Ben. Fantastic yesterday.
Unbelievable weekend. I mean, unbelievable season. We've just had a fairy tale season so far. No better way to continue it than to have a win in my backyard.
I was going to say, in a backyard, you're making your front yard as well, because fourth win in five starts at COTA?
That's right. We had an off year last year, but 80% is still pretty good.
Yeah, I'll take that. But it wasn't without drama. You and your teammate were having to work it, right?
That's right. We didn't expect to have the top speed to be able to compete on some of those long straights out of Circuit of the Americas. We discounted the power of a draft, I think. So it worked out pretty well. The downforce on that AMG GT3 worked really well at COTA. The tires fall off pretty quickly out at Circuit of the Americas, and so we didn't have the fastest car in qualifying or at the beginning of a stint, but really helped us a ton in our raceability, our ability to work our way up front throughout a stint as we watch the other cars around us use up their tires. So it was a really dramatic race, as you said, and just a great, almost unexpected win. Everyone on the team, the car has been perfect. Everybody on the team has been perfect. We haven't put a wheel wrong yet all season, and we've been rewarded for it.
Tell me a little bit about the Mercedes AMG, because I've watched it in the last few years at both Macau and in the GT Asia series, and just talking to the drivers and engineers, when you look at that car, it looks very big at the front. It looks like it would be a hard car to handle, but like I say, they dominated Macau and places like that, so it just seems as though it's actually one of the best or sweetest handling cars out there. Is that the case?
Well, you say it looks kind of big with a big front end. To me, it looks like kind of like a Viper.
Yeah, good point.
which we're very familiar with, but it actually handles quite differently than the Viper. The Viper didn't have much downforce and was really good on top speed. The AMG is different than that, very different than that. It is incredible suspension dynamics, incredible aero, and just. The way it handles, the way it does whatever you ask it to do, is amazing. It's the best driving race car that I've ever driven. It's really incredible in that, you know, the biggest question people ask me is, well, how is it different than the Viper? And, you know, it's still a big displacement, naturally aspirated engine with lots of torque and a front engine, similar wheelbase. But the biggest difference to me is that when you made a mistake in the Viper, it would cost you a half a second. And when you make a mistake in the AMG, it costs you 0.2. It's so comfortable to drive at the limit, which is, you know, is what you need for an endurance race. You have several different drivers put in lots of different types of situations when you've got four different classes racing on the track at the same time. And the way the car is able to handle every different situation is good. It's just a well-rounded machine. You know, the Viper production, this is the last year of the street car. And because of our success in the Viper, whether it was with Riley or with Jerome and myself, we were pretty popular around the paddock last year. We made it well known that we were going to switch manufacturers, and we were incredibly excited to find out that Mercedes-Benz and AMG wanted to race their GT3 car in North America in IMSA. And because, you know, I look at across the world at the various endurance races, and I have to think that the Nürburgring, the 24 hours of the Nürburgring, it's got to be one of the most difficult races.
Yeah.
For a car to withstand and all the different situations that exist there. And they swept the podium. You know, 1, 2, 3 were AMG, GT3 wow. cars. And that was all I needed to see to know where I really wanted to be.
But, you know,
it was the right choice, I guess I would say.
You know, I could see that the attraction, though. I think Viper, big American muscle car, but the AMGs are kind of the same way. All the AMGs are kind of similar, big V8s, big, you know, muscle cars, but obviously the finesse and the handling like you're talking about. Well, Ben, I want to ask you something. I want to go back to the tires. You're talking about when the tires were falling off. It looked like, and this is no scientific at all, but it looked like the tires would fall off, but then you kind of stabilize for a long period of time, or were they degrading in a linear fashion?
So, hey, I want to be very very clear that this is not, you know, we race on Continental tires. This is not a Continental tire issue. The Continental right. tires are great. I've raced there on many different types of tires, and it is it happens to every tire. And it's interesting. It's not that the track is hard on the tires. It doesn't eat up the tires. You know, the tires still look like they're in good shape. But as you say, you know, they drop off and then they stabilize. But you only get maybe 3 or 4 laps of really good sweet spot out of the tire. And for some reason at that track, the difference between the sweet spot and the stabilized tire, if you will, is over 2 seconds. And so it's a big difference, in terms of your strategy and how you use the tires. And of course, as usual with any track and any tire, you know, if you push it over its limit for too long,
sure,
it continues to drop off. So, you know, if you're in a battle with another car, you're trying to get around a car, and you know, you're coming around so many of those tight corners and trying to get out of there, get a good exit, you overheat the rears by sliding sideways and spinning around, or coming around the carousel as the track falls away from you there in 16, 17, and 18. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just a really long curve, and you can just eat the fronts up if you push it too hard. So, you know, in our GT3 car, of course, we have both traction control and ABS, and we turned all of those settings in our car up to what would normally be like a rain setting, huh, a wet setting, because we wanted to save the tire.
Interesting.
It turned out to be a good strategy for us because, Who cares how fast you are in the first 30 minutes of a stint? All you care about is how fast you are at the end.
Yeah, no kidding. Talking about beginnings and endings, I want to talk about your career, because we have a lot of big stars, including yourself, guys who are hooning round of a Saturday afternoon around the circuit of the Americas. And I'm sure little Jimmy was sitting in the crowd there going, ah, yeah, I'd love to do that one day. And it always looks like, you know, unobtainium to the mere mortals. But you started... You got a Christmas present, and you got a chance to do a track day, and you would, that was it, right?
That's right. I'm 46 years old. In 10 years ago, my wife bought me a weekend. I went out to Texas World Speedway in College Station in a Viper off of the showroom of the dealership, and I didn't take a helmet. I didn't take any tools. I didn't know anything. I borrowed an open face helmet from the track, and I quickly went out and boiled my brake fluid, which I didn't even know what that was. as is typical, the incredible camaraderie and crowd there at the track quickly educated me on what I'd done and let me borrow, teached me how to fix it. So we bled the brakes, and I went back out, but I was completely hooked. And I bought a car, and golly, I went out in the first six events I went in, I had six incidences. I got put on probation, and that's exactly what I needed. So I learned that I was trying too hard, and I was overdriving the car, I'm very competitive, but I love driving a car. I'm lucky enough to be in the car business, which helps me justify it at least a little bit. It at least helps me afford to do it. Kept doing it, kept going up different levels of competitiveness and doing well. Just kind of a dream come true to be able to jump up into the American Le Mans series at the time in 2013, jump up into endurance racing. And that's really what I love. I love all the, most of the club racing I grew up doing were, 45 minute races, and they're fun. The sprint races are fun and great, but, there's just so much more drama that comes out of switching drivers and having different classes on the track and having pit stops. And there's so many more things that can go on there. With the ability to get laps back and that type of thing, you're never out of it. I've at Daytona, the 24-hour race, I've been down 5-6 laps most years and been able to get back on the lead lap. And so I love the drama. I love the ups and downs. And therefore, I love endurance racing. So I'm just completely hooked and feel blessed enough to be able to continue doing it.
You know, it's funny. I always loved cars, and racing was always on the periphery of what I like to do. But One of the things that tricked me, pushed me over the edge to racing, was my trip to Texas World in College Station, and with a group of
Aggies stick together.
I'm an Aggie as well, but we were driving the competing car in the day, because these were ZR1. This was back in the LT5 ZR1 day. Remember the 32 valve?
Yeah.
Well, a bunch of us had those ZR1s, and we drove up to Texas World. And we were waiting in the gate to go in the inside, and it started raining, and we were like, no, but it dried off, and we got as Jonathan puts it, hoon around that track. And that kind of changed the world for me for racing. I didn't go as far as you did, obviously, but that's funny that we both had that exact same experience. And that was about 15 years ago for me. So I was just a few years ahead of you, but very similar in the way I moved into racing.
I still love that place. It's one of my favorite places on the globe.
I got to get one more thing out of you, Ben, because I always like when we have drivers on to sort of get them out of their comfort zone a little bit, because I know you follow the scene like everybody else. I got to get your take on Alonso. What do you think about the decision Fernando Alonso has made to come to America and take on the greatest spectacle in racing?
I think it's awesome. It doesn't really matter what I think. What impresses me is that over 2 million people watched him test.
We were going to talk about that, and I just wanted to get your take on it. Because that was just insane, isn't it?
I mean, I don't know how many people watch the actual Indy 500.
But yeah.
For 2 million people to get on and watch him go around in circles by himself is a pretty big deal.
No yeah. kidding. You know, and, you know, Zach Brown must be laughing his suit because, on the one hand, the Honda PR disaster that is Formula One is now somehow being rescued.
Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, the fact is he's not in a Ferrari or a Mercedes. And so he's probably not going to do that well in Monaco. So, therefore, why not? I think it's awesome. I just went to the Road Racing Drivers Club banquet at Long Beach when we were there, and they were honoring A.J. Foyt and Dan Gurney and Emerson Fittipaldi. And they were all there, and it was an unbelievable deal. But to sit there and listen to those guys on the stage talk about, I'm not going to get the stats right, but, you know, Dan Gurney, they won Le Mans in 67. And then that next weekend, he went to Spa and won in his own car, in his Eagle that he built. And then came to the United States and won in a Trans Am car. And A.J. Foyt is the only driver to have won the Indy 500 and the Daytona 500 and the 24 Hours of Daytona and the 24 Hours of Le Mans. And that type of driver just doesn't exist much anymore. And so for Alonso to, he's a world champion. He's been there and done that. Mm-hmm. For him to come over and just to compete in the greatest spectacle in racing is awesome. I encourage it. I love it. And I wish there was more of it.
Yeah, I do too. And I think he will go on to find a way to get into Le Mans, obviously. And I think he'll continue to come back, actually, once now he's done it. I think even if it means, I mean, obviously, if he's challenging for and I also think that now with Americans running Formula One, there might be a look at how to change that. Because I honestly think that Formula One and Indy have gone head to head as though there's been some competition, and they're very different animals. And I always thought that having those two spectacles on the same day was over the top, and I hope that changes. That's my 10 cents, but because they're two fantastic spectacles. But I think Alonso, like he always has done, is cracking the mold.
You bet. I'm hoping I can be the first one to make that call, and I can get him on my 24 Hours of Le Mans team.
There you go. Well, let's start a competition. Who's Alonso going to drive with? I love it. Well, Ben, keep on winning. I mean, what can we say? I mean, it's just been a fairy tale start to the season.
For sure. Golly, it's really unbelievable. The only team that is obviously done had a better performance so far than we have had is the number 10 Cadillac with the Wayne Taylor Racing guys. Yeah. I'm excited that I will be at the 24 Hours of Le Mans with Jerome and I, and Ricky Taylor will be with us in a LMP2 this year. And so if luck has anything to do with it, we've got the right group of people together. We're on a roll.
Yeah, well, that's you guys are obviously doing well, so just keep it up. Well, Ben, you want to plug your team, your dealer, Viper Exchange? Anybody you want to give any credit to,
man,
here?
I appreciate that. I will always plug Viper Exchange.
There you go.
It's interesting for us as being the number one volume Viper dealer in the world. You know, we really wanted to race an AMG from the beginning, but I struggled with it. I sell 17 different brands of cars, and I told AMG, I said, I can't race something I don't sell. And so the short version is that I am 18. I'm just starting to break ground on a new Mercedes-Benz
awesome.
Dealership in College Station.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
That's great.
So,
that's awesome.
It's the first time I can point to racing and say it actually might make me some money.
Yeah, well, that's great, man. that's a great way to do it.
So, in future years, I should be able to promote. I don't know what the website will be. I don't think it'll be Mercedes Exchange or AMG Exchange. It was a really funny story. We actually went out and reserved the site for Exotics Exchange. And we were going to go into the supercar, exotic supercar deal, but we had so much value in Viper Exchange, we went out and reserved the site exoticsexchange.com.
Yeah.
And I asked someone else to look at it to talk about building a site, and he says, tell me what you want me to build for a site named Exotic Sex Change.
I can't believe I didn't get that before you went there. That is crazy.
we had to rethink that. So
yeah.
We don't have anything yet. So right now we're just enjoying racing the AMG and promoting Mercedes-Benz. We've got a big lead in the Manufacturers Championship. And the team championship and the driver's championship. And so, the Mercedes AMG has won the last three races in a row. We got third place at Daytona and, just having a spectacular time. I got to represent, Mercedes and AMG this morning back at COTA again, with the Texas Auto Riders, Association had their, drive event at COTA this morning. And so I got to take some journalists on some thrilling rides this morning.
Oh, where were we?
Where was the call, Ben?
Yeah. It's a good question.
got him on the spot. Well, Ben, we got to wrap it up. Thank you so much for coming back on Speed City. We really appreciate it. You're a fantastic guest on the show, and best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you. Call anytime. I love visiting with you guys. Appreciate what you do.
All right.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks a lot, Ben.
All right. See ya. Bye.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. Live from Austin, this is Speed City. We'll be back after these messages.
Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable, and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself, Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane.
MV Agusta motorcycles are the epitome of Italian style, precisely crafted with a passion for two-wheel art on wheels. Ducati Austin are the only MV Agusta and Ducati factory authorized technicians in Austin, servicing all European brands. Check the Brutale Sport Naked, the most extreme essential naked bike ever. Or the Turismo Veloce 800, the first revolutionary tourer to be built by MV Agusta. Or if you want a pedigree steeped in racing, then look no further than the World Supersport winning triple F3, 675 and 800. Or go all out for the ultimate legendary F4 MV Agusta. Italian style with Texas soul. Trade-in, consignments welcome and financing available. Ducati Austin and the home of MV Agusta at 818 Breaker Lane, just east of I-35.
When news happens, it happens here. Talk 1370, the right choice.
Hello, I'm Felipe Massa, and this is Speed City.
It's Felipe Massa.
Sì, obrigado, Felipe.
Dude, we gotta talk a little MotoGP because
yeah, we have,
and we didn't get it in, and there was some good racing, man, in Jerez.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, we were chatting away with Ben, but MotoGP was great. Three Spanish winners, effectively, or three Spaniards on the podium, but. What I wanted to say, I tweeted out earlier that I wanted to talk about Danny Pedrosa won the race, right?
Yeah.
And Danny hasn't won since last year at Misano. To be honest, in the last few years, Danny Pedrosa has been much criticized by the likes of Schwantz, by the likes of Edwards, by the likes of a lot of folk. Because he's had the dream job. And meanwhile, Marquez has been romping around on the same bike and winning championships. So Danny has had a bit of a crisis and, but he's back up now. But the real story for me anyway, and I saw him last week, is that a former world champion in Sete Gibernau is the man in his corner.
Oh.
Fellow Spaniard. And I think a perfect guy to be in his corner. And I think that's been the difference.
So wait, what's his role?
Exactly. Basically as a rider mentor. He is looking after Danny Pedrosa, and he's in the corner, and he was in the pit today, in the garage. And Sete is both a really interesting guy, fast guy, took on Rossi in the day. You know, I mean, he's not that ancient by any means, so he knows the modern motorcycle. And I think he knows exactly what to do with Danny, and he's proving to be the one factor I think that Danny was missing. He's a shy guy, is Danny. He's a little fella. He hasn't got the personality of, let's say, Marc Márquez. And by the way, talking of Márquez, congratulations to Alex Márquez.
Yeah, first time
winner in Moto 2. Yeah, former Moto 3 world champion, but totally dominated the weekend. And the fans, interestingly enough, in Jerez, of which there are, 230,000 plus, but a lot of fans for him, particularly, more so than his brother, not say more so, but you know what I mean? Those two are absolutely, if you can start a dynasty within a dynasty, i.e. the Spaniards, yeah. I mean, you know, Jorge is on the podium and he's got a corner named after him at that track.
Yeah.
And that's another big story for Ducati is finally Jorge. Yeah.
Now, on the podium.
I have to say, if he'd have come 12th here, which is literally his backyard, and Jerez has been so good to him as a competitor. And like I said, the corner, the last corner named after him, turn 13. He also has come off worse at that corner too, now and again. But if he was going to have a terrible weekend at Jerez, then we would be looking at the bike, but we're not. He had a good weekend. He was still down on the Hondas, but it's a much better result for them. And if anybody's scratching their heads this weekend, is got to be Yamaha. Poor old Rossi ran out of tires, and where was Vinales? Remember Vinales, the guy that dominated until he got here?
Yeah, exactly. That was one of my questions. Like, what happened?
Well, I mean, certainly in terms of looking at the overall result, Rossi was way down in terms of if you look at the thing to look at the end of a MotoGP race is how many seconds behind the leader are you? And they were a long way behind. So there'll be some scratching of heads at Yamaha.
Yep. Well, we are out of time. We want to thank everybody. Thank our guest, Ben Keating, for coming on the show. Thank everybody for tuning in. And check us out on our website, speedcitybroadcast.com. Lots of content. Check out our SoundCloud, too, because we have lots of content going
and
up there all the time.
I've done some great interviews that we did at Circuit of the Americas with both Suzuki and Aprilia. So
all right,
look out for those.
All right. Thanks a lot for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week.
Happy trails.